welcome to another episode of A Little Ray of Sunshine, Inspirational Stories from Everyday People. Today is part two of Gary Keith's first episode, which was last week. So just for reference, if you'd like to go back and listen to part one, it will make more sense when you get to this episode. So hope you enjoy.
He came for 4 years, every Sunday, as a 12-year-old kid, 13-year-old kid. When kids sometimes start turning away from church, God, religion, pulled in many different directions, and they don't know anything much about life, and life is tough and challenging, something kept getting me up. I know what it is now. I didn't at the time, and kept going. It came time for me to be my own man. Remember all that money I'd been saving?
Yep. You buy your car?
That's right. I worked in tobacco fields. Now, $2,500 was a lot for me back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I went and laid down $2,500 and bought my car. And so I could keep going to church. And so at 16, a lot of kids start peeling away, going different directions. It's hard to keep their attention. Something kept pulling me that direction. I'm still going on my own. Occasionally, I take my brother, 4 years behind me, around 12. He would go sometimes. Nobody else would. I'd come home. My job was to do bar stuff. Imagine that. You go to church, you partake of the sacrament, then you go home and do bar stuff. Bar stuff is handing out beer and alcohol to drunks.
Sure.
And sweeping up behind them and cleaning up behind them and all the things that go with that, which is a story of a different day. So I kept going. Working. I made another goal. I said, I'm going to be the first one in my family to finish high school. My parents didn't do it. My siblings didn't do it. Aunts and uncles didn't do it. Grandparents didn't do it. I'm not dropping. It's not a big accomplishment, but for me it was. You might as well tell me I just got a 4-year degree in something. Because I finished school. I was so proud of myself. My mother, still with her antics, still angry with the world, still mad. She was a gun-toting person, still shooting people. I mean, it's a whole big mess there. So, sister's off and married. Now I'm done high school. What do I do? What do I do in life now? I don't know anything about life. I'm still really uneducated, still pretty poor, don't know anyone. I said, you know what? My buddies are going to be going to a technical college, a community college. I'm going to go with them. Right. So I went, just for something to do out of the house away from my mother. So I went for 2 years, got my degree in machine tool and die making as a machinist. And so I did that and was going through now, working a full-time job at Stanley Tools, making screwdrivers, and going full-time to school to be a machinist. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to carry this career on out and see what I can do. And all of a sudden, as I was driving back and forth between Stanley Tools and the community college, something, I don't know where it came from, Grover. It says, you need to go see your branch president about serving a mission. Now, this is out of the blue.
Yeah.
We hadn't had a missionary in that branch in almost 30 years. I know the gentleman, the last one that went. He was the last one about 30 years ago. My branch president never even asked me about that, serving a mission. I was scared to death of it because I knew nothing about it, never even seen missionaries in my small branch. But something told me to go do that. I says, nah, I'm not. I don't have the money. My mom's not going to support it. That's not a good thing to do. It kept being insistent over and over and over, that message, that feeling. So I'm just turning 19. I'll walk into my branch president. I'd love to have a meeting with you. I says, president, what would it take for a young man to go on a mission? He almost fell on the floor. He's just a good old country fella, just probably off the tractor himself. His hands are greasy and dirty and just a good old fella. And he looks at me in all honesty, says, "You know, I really don't know, but I'll have an answer for you next Sunday." Uh-huh. I told you I hadn't had a missionary in 30 years.
Oh, right.
Right. So he calls the stake president. Next Sunday we meet. He provides his whole laundry list of things. And of course, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I took those things out in the car and looked at them under the big oak tree in my nice car. And I said, that's too hard for me. I that's no way. I can't do all those things. I mean, I hadn't been to a dentist in my whole childhood life. That's the truth. And you're talking about doing all these things from dentistry to doctors to clothing. But I thought about it on the drive home. I said, you know what? That might be my ticket out of here. I don't know where I'm going, what I'm doing. I barely even have a strong testimony because I don't even know what I'd be preaching. So I went home and told my mother. You might as well told her that not only was she ugly, but she was fat, because she went off on me like there was no tomorrow. Something that good, something that amazing that you'd want your children to be engaged in, she really threw a wrench in it. Don't you ever consider that. Don't you ever think about doing that. You're never leaving this place. You're never going to go away. You don't know anything about life. You don't know anything about people. I mean, just on and on and on. And she used some very choice words in the midst of all that. I'm standing there at this point. I'm 19 years old. She can't push me around anymore like she used to.
Yeah.
I've gotten much bigger. I says, "Nope, Mom. I've made up my mind. I'm going to go." She didn't like it. Fire was in her eyes. And I commenced the process of getting some help from people to fill out the paperwork. And we got it all filled out, everything done. The dentistry bills were horrible because, once again, I hadn't ever been to a dentist in my life. When the dentist says, "Have you been flossing?" I had no idea what floss was. And he says, "You got some bad teeth need pulling." I said, "Fine, let's get them out." Got the work done, paper in. And I was called to serve in the South Dakota Rapid City Mission, both Dakotas, parts of Wyoming, Nebraska, Iowa, the largest land mission in the states. And I took off, scared, nervous, never been to the temple, didn't know what that was all about. Never talked to really anybody much about that process. And I flew out to Salt Lake and met a total stranger. It was a son of a man who lived in our area. He picked me up and took me to the temple, and for my first time, out of all places, Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, what a great experience. Mm-hmm. And so I served those 2 years faithfully. The second person that God put in my way to help change my life was my mission president. He definitely was the next angel. He was the father I never had. He was the father that I was looking for. He was the father that I wanted to be someday. Still alive today. We still communicate today. I talk about him in my book because he made such an impact upon me.
Wow.
I changed from nothing to something. I found my self-esteem. I dove into that toilet with both hands and I drug it out. I shook it off, dried it, and I put it on. I put on a badge of courage. He helped bring out self-confidence in me. He taught me leadership skills that I'd never heard or seen before in my life. He helped teach me what it's going to be like to be a father and a husband, to be a businessman. He taught me so much in those 2 short years that I told him I'll never be able to repay him. I'd be ever so grateful. And I went up the leadership ranks in the mission and helped my self-esteem even more, from a district leader to zone leader, helped give me more responsibility and eventually assistant to the president with him. It was such a great blessing serving side by side with him. So.
I've just been sitting here just enthralled by your story. Normally, if you listen to some of my podcasts, you can't shut me up. But I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, holy cow. And, you know, everything you went through to where you are today, that just amazes me. So, yeah, you had me speechless.
Well, I appreciate that. I didn't need to do that. There's so much I left out that is in my book that goes into a lot more detail. But during this mission time, as oftentimes happen, young men sometimes meet an amazing person that's going to make an impact upon their life as well. God sent me out there to find my eternal companion as well.
Great.
Yep. As a new missionary, I was knocking on the door one day. I was brand new with my senior companion, and we knock on the door of this lady. And back then, you could go in and visit with single ladies or sisters. And she says, "All right, come on in." She says, "I'm right now studying for Catholicism. My husband's already joined, and I'm thinking about joining as well." And we said, "Yes, ma'am, no problem. And we just want to teach you some messages and blah, blah, blah." Something came up during the topic that, you know, the cardinals or popes or priests or whatever are married in the Catholic Church. And we were talking about that. And I'm a new missionary, so I'm memorizing all these new scriptures. And I says, "Ma'am," I says, "I think I believe that Peter was your first pope, right?" And she says, "Yes." I said, "Did you realize he was married?" And she almost fell on the floor. I says, "Yes, ma'am, he was." She says, "How do you know?" I says, "Well, let's look in Mark chapter 1, verse 30. And she sat there and raised, she says, "And Peter's wife's mother lay sick of fever." I said, "What does that say to you?" "Peter's wife's mother." "Really?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "I can't wait to show this to the people I'm taking my class from." I said, "That's great." She did. She came back next week, or we did, said they had no answer for me. She says, "I want to know more. I want to know more about your church, because this is a revelation to me. It's an inspiration to me." Make a long story short, she took all the lessons. She didn't join Catholicism. She joined the LDS Church. To a little bit of dismay to her husband, but then he became open to it as well. He eventually joined too. I tell you that story because this lady referred one of her best friends to the missionaries. I had been transferred out by then, but the lady that she was referred to would end up becoming my wife.
I'll be done.
On a referral. I got transferred back a year and a half later as an assistant to the president. And she cut all missionaries' hair for free in her salon. We take anything that's free. We got to know each other, and we got to writing, calling afterwards. And we just knew it was a match made in heaven. 41 years later, still going strong. And four amazing daughters, four handsome sons. 8 kids, gosh, all the boys have served missions. I think all of them except for one now has been married in the temple. Mm-hmm. We're waiting for him to get married here soon. Got 13 grandkids along the way. And you know what? Life is about choices. And
yeah.
I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I do know this. God planted some angels in my life, and thank goodness I had the wherewithal to at least recognize that and not be scared away from it. I had this saying I've been saying for some time that says, if you want your life to be a magnificent story, then realize that you are its author. For the most part, I'm responsible for me. I mean, tragedies happen, mishaps happen, disasters happen, things are put upon us sometimes that don't seem fair, don't seem right. I get it. But in the end, I feel like I've got to find a way to shake out of it and look for what our good friend Sister Miller says, the silver lining.
Right. You found it, didn't you?
Exactly. No doubt about it. And so, in addition to that, I wanted to learn how to break the generational chains of dysfunction. That's not just something you wake up and overcome overnight after going on a mission. You still got to deal with some of the stuff that's been poured into your skull for the first 20 years.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, you got to come back home from that mission. You got to go back and see these people again. You can easily go back into that same situation and get worse, or you got to find a way to break the chains.
Yeah.
To me, thank goodness for my mission president, he gave me some strategies and plans on how to break the generational chains of dysfunction.
That's great.
And until someone steps up and says, enough is enough, I'm no longer going to do that, we'll continue to repeat the same vicious cycle. So in the last half of my book, that's how I talk about, and maybe one day we can talk about that, or readers can get the book there and find it themselves, on my step-by-step and my strategies I use to break those generational chains.
Well, it must have worked, it sounds like. I mean, looking where you're at. Now, you know, I had a thought, Gary, I want to throw at you and see what your answer is.
Sure.
Could you even have imagined as a 12-year-old to 16-year-old, somewhere in their age boy, could you even have imagined that you'd be where you are today at that point?
I mean, that would be an absolute no. No.
Yeah.
I mean, Grover, people are lucky if they lived age 30 in my community. Hmm. If you pass 30, you're lucky. My brother did get a little bit lucky. He lived to 46, but he got caught up into that after I left. He decided to go left. I went right and got caught up in the drugs, the alcohol. And I don't know, some people say that when you come from alcoholics and they're drinking while you're, pregnant with you, that there can be some of that can carry on through to you.
Like fetal alcohol syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it bypassed me. I've worked in bars and stuff my whole life. I never wanted it because I saw what it did to people and the bad it did.
Right.
But he couldn't do away with it and ended up eating his liver up and it tore him apart. And age 46, he succumbed to life.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And most of my nieces and nephews and sisters and brother-in-laws, and they, if they lived to 30 to 40, they were lucky. And, I always say you're always one decision away from a totally different life.
That's right. I believe.
Right?
That. Yeah.
And one of our great leaders that we know said decisions determine destiny.
Yeah. That was Thomas S. Monson.
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. I have that hanging in my truck, actually.
Do you?
I do. I have that right hanging in my truck off the mirror.
It's so powerful and such a three word that's so succinct in its meaning. That is so strong that I try to teach my kids that, you know what, you do have your agency.
Yeah.
And I want you to make your choices. And I want you to be able to see the good and the bad. But just remember, decisions determine destiny. Mm-hmm. And so think wisely. And so, you know, we teach our kids that and our grandkids that. We hope they choose the right, but we're human and we don't always do. But hopefully we learn from it, get better, and move on.
That's right. So you mentioned that you're lucky if you can reach the age of 30 where you grew up. How old are you now, Gary?
I am 63 years young.
Well, I'm right there with you, brother. In 2 weeks, I'll be 63.
Is that right?
Yep.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, for me, and I'm sure for you, just living the word of wisdom and the law of health and just the exercise and just hanging around good people and just the positive attitude. I don't know. My health. I'm so blessed with my health. I'm sure you probably are as well. And I'm not saying that happens to everybody, but more so than not.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I mean, it's been such a blessing to see that and, how that can make an impact upon your life for sure.
Absolutely. And the choices you made, even at a young age, had a huge impact on the direction that you took in your life, obviously. So, wow. Hats off to you, man.
Okay. No question. I meant to tell you, I didn't pursue the machine tool and die making stuff.
Oh, what'd you do?
After my mission, gosh, I said, man, you know, I'm more of a people person than I'm a machine operator. Mm-hmm. And nothing wrong with being a machine operator.
Right.
I think just going through those 2 years, as you know, you come out of your shell.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I definitely want to be in the sales world. That's what my mission president was in. And so I got into the financial service and insurance business and own my own practice now for 30 some years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I raised my family, and so it's been good to me and good to them, and it's been a blessing.
Well, you've been a blessing to your family, it sounds like, as well. I mean, if I'm growing up and I hear these stories about from my parents, I'm thinking to myself, man, if they can do it, I can do it, and I can do hard things.
You know, that's well said, Grover, and that's one of the reasons why I keep wanting to share this story, not only for others out there who are struggling with thoughts of suicide or addictive behaviors or disastrous, you know, childhoods or life, abusive relationships, but mainly it's for my kids and grandkids.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, here's a book Dad read, here's a written, and here's a story, here's what he went through. You know what, I'm having a tough time right now. Let me see how he would have handled it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll carry on for forever. I mean, you know, your children and their children and their children.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely the hopes. And, you know, I sat down to do this book, you know, several years back, four or five years ago now. I said, I'm not a writer. You know how we all can talk ourselves out of things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I barely passed school. But, you know, through inspiration, a little bit of hard work. I do know about hard work. And just pecking at a computer keyboard, I've had all the writers that I've talked to in my life say, listen, the key is, it's just write. Don't worry about being perfect. Just sit down and start writing. And
get your thoughts out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. So it's been a blessing to me. I speak now to a lot of civic groups, sales organizations, any youth groups that I can to help them through their struggles, whether it's low self-esteem, low self-confidence, whether it's just having thoughts of they just feeling hopeless or worthless or whatever. I speak to as many groups as I can just to help bring some light and some hope in their life.
Well, that's just an amazing work that you're doing. It's helping a lot of people and bringing joy back into people's lives, I can imagine, as well.
Yeah, yes. I think that's it, is bringing that joy to them so they can find. I could share some stories of that and teaching with the young men's group because I wanted to be a part of the young men's as I was coming up through the church because I was a young man, a man out there who struggled with life. And I said, you know what? I want to make an impact upon these young guys' life. And they're at a critical point. They're 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. The world's pulling at them. How can I make a difference in their life and get them excited about life and hopefully strive to get them on that mission so it can make a huge difference in the world?
Yeah. Well,
and that's what I've sort of been doing.
That's, again, that's just a lot of people go into their professions. They love it. Some people don't love it. I can imagine that with everything you've done in your life and your experiences, that might even be, don't let me put words in your mouth here, Gary, but it feels like what you do on the side from insurance could probably even be as much or more rewarding than work itself. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, I've made a great career out of the insurance and financial service side. And you know what? That puts bread on the table and it keeps a roof over our head. But this is the real passion. I knew it and I sensed it as I was getting older in life that, you know, you want to do something else that's going to make a larger impact upon people's lives. And insurance does that. Trust me, it's been a great blessing to see the blessing that insurance proceeds make on families' lives. But this does in the same way. And I've learned that tragic events a person experiences in life can be either handled by a breakdown or a breakthrough. And I'm trying to help people find that, see that breakthrough. It's back to my good sister, Sister Miller, who had her funeral today. It's that silver lining. That's that breakthrough that you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. She was such a joy to interview. I was so saddened when you told me that she had passed.
Same here. It was a shock to all of us, and she will be sorely missed, but we know she's in a great place with her wonderful daughter at this stage.
Well, Gary, you know what? You're one of those. You mentioned that God sends people, puts them in our path, and you said an angel, so to speak. I kind of thinking that you're that to other people now. What do you think?
You know what? I never thought of it in that light. But I hope that Heavenly Father sees me worthy enough to be that in some other people's lives. I hope that's the case. And I I strive for that to be. And I'm always looking for opportunities to be that guiding light or that guidepost for somebody else.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, if you're looking for it, you'll find it. I found out one thing in life, you find what you're looking for. So,
boy, isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. Yes. So, absolutely right. So, one of these days, we'll talk about the backside of the book and talk about how we can help people have some strategies on finding ways to maybe get out of those situations and not feel like they're just hopeless and stuck in a dead end.
You bet. I think that would be wonderful.
Okay.
I wasn't looking at the time, but I was just sitting here in a trance listening to what you were saying.
I love it.
Well, any parting advice before we wrap this up, Gary?
Well, I would say maybe one last thing for those who are out there who have their own story and who've gone through certain things in life and maybe a little afraid to share or don't know how to share it. The words I leave with them is this: one day you'll tell a story of how you overcame what you're going through now, and it will become part of someone else's survival guide. And to look at it as that, to think, man, my story could be part of someone else's survival guide. And when you look at it in that light, it gets you excited about maybe sharing your story. So hopefully someone might pick that up and do that, and maybe it can make a difference in their story and their life as well.
Very well said. Very well said. I hope people heard that message too, because sometimes we get caught up and think, oh, my story's not that interesting, or, you know.
Yes.
But I beg to differ. I just think too. That all of us have interesting stories to share. So,
no question. I appreciate you putting together this podcast and you doing it and getting out to as many as you can. And hopefully it'll make an impact on at least one person.
Let's hope so. All right.
Yes.
Well, Gary, you have a wonderful evening. Let's stay in touch, because I think at some point I'd like to kind of do the backside of that.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Yes, we'll make that happen, Grover. Thank you for the opportunity and the time.
You bet. And it's nice meeting you.
You as well. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And to my listeners, as always, remember to speak up, speak out, and speak often. Bye-bye.